ride. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Monday, everybody. Today's December 15th, 2025. And our top story this morning, we have got metals are ripping once again, and we got some bad data out of China. Shout out to all my favorite little G-bots. I love you guys when you show up in the comments with your A-number-one China Ultimate Strong Dragon stuff. It just really adds a nice flavor to the chat. Thank you so much for the engagement, and give my regards to God Emperor Pooh. So let's start with the metals this morning, shall we? Gold is up about 40 bucks this morning, 43.50. Just pushing those all-time highs once again. Silver is also having a heck of a morning, up about $2 here, pushing $64 once again, both hovering near all-time highs. The gold-to-silver ratio around 67.8. It is a good morning for metals. So what's – oh, also, we have some very interesting data. I got to talk about this one. In October, the flow of metal in and out of London. Some very interesting stuff we're going to talk about later in the show there. Some things that really surprised me. So what is going on with the metals here? Why are they just still ripping? I think it's a simple answer here. The simple answer is what the Fed did last week. I think the market still hasn't really digested this concept of the Fed buying T-bills. I think a lot of people are still just unaware of it because the Fed didn't pre-announce it. They didn't give us any warning. You know, everybody was talking about the rate cuts and, oh, who's Trump going to put there and what's the next rate cut going to be? And they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, $40 billion of T-bills a month. What? QE again? People still haven't gotten their heads around that. Where's the crisis that calls for all this money printing? Where is the ruction in markets? There isn't one, or at least if you believe the headlines, there isn't one. There's plenty of things that could cause one, but everything's supposed to be going well. And we find out that the Fed is going to be buying all these treasury bills. A huge amount of treasury bills, by the way. They're saying the estimated demand from the Fed for treasury bills next year could be something like 60 to 75% of total issuance by the Treasury Department. I mean, we are just directly monetizing debt now. No wonder gold and silver at all-time highs. Let's not overthink this, guys. They're destroying the money. Dixie's heading lower. We don't have to get overtly technical here. It's not hard to figure out what's going on. Also, by the way, why are Fannie and Freddie buying mortgage-backed securities again? That's something we didn't really see coming either. There's an article in Wall Street Journal this morning about Fannie and Freddie have expanded their holdings of MBS by 25%. Remember, Fannie and Freddie, that's a government-sponsored enterprise. They're kind of private, kind of not. They're backed by the implicit guarantee of the U.S. government. And right now, they're buying up mortgage bonds. What happens when you buy mortgage bonds? You bid up the price and you bid down the interest rate on those bonds, which means Fannie and Freddie are actually actively suppressing mortgage rates right now that would otherwise be moving higher if they weren't doing that. It's one of these other little things, one of these many ways that the government just keeps their fingers on the scale. Oh, you think the Fed is letting their MBS roll off the balance sheet? Oh, well, Fannie and Freddie are buying more. And that this is all happening as Fannie and Freddie are getting ready to IPO in the most bastardized version of capitalism I've ever seen in my life, where we privatize Fannie and Freddie. Yeah, sure, go ahead and IPO, privatize the gains, but we're going to somehow keep the implicit guarantee from the United States government attached to that so the taxpayers will socialize the losses, even as we're loading up their balance sheet with mortgage-backed securities. Gotta love that. Yeah, there's just not enough gold and silver in the world for what's coming here, guys. Meanwhile, we've got all kinds of data coming out of China this morning. Some really interesting stuff in China. Retail sales grew 1.3%. That's down significantly from the 2.9% in October. Sluggish demand in China. Industrial production up 4.8%. I question that a little bit, but that's down from the 4.9% in October. Fixed investment down 2.6% for the 9 months ended end of November. Property investment way down, 15.9% drop in property investment. Average home prices down. Things in China are not looking good here, and the stimmies aren't coming. You've got Chinese stocks are throwing something of a fit this morning because Xi Jinping is out in the press attacking reckless growth. That's not a phrase you hear. I mean, reckless growth, that's not a guy who's about to open the fire hose of economic stimulus when he's talking about reckless growth. So you've got especially tech stocks in China not doing particularly well this morning. We've got more scrutiny of the electric vehicle market, where prices keep falling. The Chinese government is getting very upset about how they're basically subsidizing production, loss-making vehicles, these zero-mileage cars. They're trying to get rid of that, ways that they inflate their sales. The Chinese are trying to fight deflation here. Also, China Vanke, that's pretty much the last of the big developers standing in China. They're in the news again. Bondholders have overwhelmingly rejected an extension to payments on their bonds. China Vanke is like the last of the big developers that hasn't gone belly up yet. I mean, you've had Ocean, Evergrande, Country Garden, you name it, AO Yuan, all these other big developers have all defaulted on their bonds. Still haven't liquidated their assets, by the way. They're just kind of in this purgatory over there where the courts are dragging their feet on selling any of this stuff. Same reason private equity is coming up with all these Ponzi-like ways to do secondaries and NAV financing here in the States. Everybody is afraid of finding out what their shit is worth. That's what it boils down to. The Chinese property market is no different than the private equity market here. But that one, that their bonds trading about 20 cents on the dollar, 30 cents on the dollar, not looking good for Vanke either. Now, domestically here in the States, we have our own share of problems. One thing, though, that is not a problem. Interesting data point. Dow transports are up 10% year to date. Now, that's kind of interesting because a lot of the data that we get says the goods economy is not doing well. We're seeing the jobs market doesn't look good. And yet the Dow Transports Index is doing particularly well, up 10%. Typically, a surge in the transports means you've got economic growth going on. So what's going on there? We'll talk about that a little bit, but I had a sit down with Craig Fuller from FreightWaves on Friday. We'll be posting that one later on today. A lot of really good information in that talk with Craig. I think that would explain this move in the Dow Transports. And it's not really the big bullish underlying economic theory that it sounds like, although typically a move like that in the transports is a very, very good signal. Maybe it's just my perma bear showing then again, that too. I wear it here on my sleeve, guys, my perma bear. I resemble that. What else we've got? iRobot has filed for bankruptcy. That is the maker of the Roomba. They were supposed to be merging with Amazon. They decided not to after pushback from regulators, particularly in the European Union. And a year and a half later, iRobot is going kaput. Shareholders are going to get wiped out. And, you know, I hear so much about robots, right? Optimus, humanoid robots, all these stupid demos and robots passing out candy in Times Squares hooked up to a gas-powered generator. Everybody kind of forgot about that. The only consumer robot product in the world, it's been around for about 20 years, and it just went bankrupt. I'm sorry, guys. I just don't think a humanoid robot is going to be washing your dishes anytime soon. Call me crazy, but they've been vacuuming our floors for 20 years, and they just went bankrupt, and they can't get that right. But all of a sudden, Optimus is going to start doing all our household chores for us. This is just stupid science fiction being spun by Silicon Valley. They can't help themselves. Hey, I hear time travel is going to be awesome, though. I think there's a time travel startup that's about to go public. So maybe you guys could bid that one up to a couple of trillion dollars, you animals, you. What else we got? McKinsey is laying people off by the thousands. That's a big consulting firm. Again, underlying economic weakness kind of flies in the face of that story about the Dow Transports. And kind of hilarious story. TPG has lost $600 million on a leveraged buyout of a cosmetics company. Private equity, they just can't help themselves. They buy a company, they saddle it with debt, they pay themselves a big dividend, and shortly thereafter, that company starts to go away. But meanwhile, the founder of that company is off like doing the whole speaking tour and publishing a book about building a billion-dollar empire and then immediately handing it over to private equity and letting them run it into the ground. You just gotta love it. Guys, we got a lot going on this morning. Before we shrink my bell into the head, let's just say yesterday there was a lot of stories that weren't so good. All right. And if you want to hear about those stories, you're going to hear all about it on the other news channels. We're not going to do it here. Let me just tell you my story yesterday. I watched Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas with my daughters yesterday, and it was awesome. All right. River Bottom Nightmare Band for the win. So if you guys want to hear about all that nasty shit that happened yesterday elsewhere, there's plenty of that out there, but I'm going to focus on the good instead. That's what I did yesterday while the world was proving just how awful it is outside of my house. Anyways, let's shrink my big melon of a head and see what's going on in the world of finance this morning. Hey, don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the algorithm, you new guys, so you can come back tomorrow, have your coffee with the Melon Heads as we go through markets every single day. Right now, the S&P 500 is higher by 40 points, 0.57% to the upside. The Dow is also up by 250 points. Stocks having a good morning here, about a half a percent higher. And the NASDAQ is leading the way higher, up 73 points after a pretty rough sell-off for the NASDAQ on Friday, 184 points in the green for the NASDAQ. Dollar's just quietly getting weaker here, 98.3, down another 10 basis points this morning. We were even lower than that not too long ago. Dollar's getting weaker, not too hard to figure out why, guys. The Fed is printing money again. Just don't call it QE. Whatever you do, it's not QE. It's something else. We created a new acronym for it. So, yeah, it's a different, totally identical thing. Looking over at the bond market, we got yields a little bit lower this morning, especially on the long end. 30-year Treasury, 4.841. That's lower by 1.5 basis points. The 10-year is at 4.174, down by 2 points. The 2-year, 3.501, off by almost 3 points. And the 1 month is higher by a fraction of a point at 3.670. By the way, shout out to my friends at MacroEdge this morning. Posted this one. I got a kick out of this story. The Bank of Japan is expected to begin selling its 83 trillion yen. That's a lot of yen. About $534 billion portfolio of exchange-traded funds as early as next month. So we talked about this one a couple of months ago, that the Bank of Japan, besides just buying all of their government debt, they've also been buying stocks, ETFs, bidding up their own stock market. Well, they're going to start unwinding that position. And MacroEdge quite hilariously points out here, a process projected to take over 100 years. Okay, good luck with that. You might want to get started. I mean, okay, they're saying they're expected to begin as early as next month. It's going to take 100 years. Why don't you just go ahead and start it now? I mean, these things can't be rushed, am I right? Good God. What are the odds they actually make it that 100 years without turning the money printers back on and buying it again? Based on what our Fed does, probably pretty slim. Looking over at Bitcoin this morning, it's saying we're higher here, but we're actually had a rough weekend. We are lower than we were Friday. We started Friday around 92,000. We're here about 89,586, up from yesterday's lows, but still under that important 90,000 psychological level. And again, this is as priced on Coinbase, 89,600. Looking over at the precious metals board. Okay, we're off our highs of the morning, but still looking pretty good here. A lot of green in metals. Spot gold, $4,327. That's up about 26 bucks or 0.6% higher this morning. February COMEX gold futures, 4361, higher by almost $33 or 0.75% higher. But silver is up $1.91, 3% higher, 63.93. We were as high as 64.10 this morning. March COMEX futures, 63.99. Do I hear 64? There we go. Sold to the man for $64. Up $1.98, 3.2% higher. I like the shiny. Copper is up by 2%. Platinum is up 2.12%. Palladium's having a heck of a morning, up 5.1% for palladium. And WTI crude oil is down by about 0.6%, 33 cents a barrel cheaper at $56.92 for February WTI futures. But back to the metals here. Take a look at this one from Goldfish Charts on X. And I saw this one because my friend Bob Coleman reposted it. Some interesting data here about the flow of silver in and out of London in October. Remember, we're just challenging those October highs right now. We had that big sell-off at the end or middle of October, curiously timed right around options expiration, as always. By the way, options expiration is this Friday as well. Guys, be careful on leverage. We've had some pretty big price smashes right before options expiration over these last couple of months. But it's the flow of metal, where it was coming from and where it was going to versus London. 2,077 tons of imports into London. Remember leading up to that crash in October, and I use the term crash very lightly. It was a minor price correction or a price smash. We went down a couple of bucks. But 2,077 tons of silver flowed into London to alleviate that shortage. There was a big shortage. The cost to lease was very high. There was a shortage of SLV shares. The cost to borrow was over 20% at one point. 1,392 tons of silver came from the United States. They put it on a plane and they sent it over to London to alleviate the shortage. That they were at, London was just absolutely draining the COMEX. That is a massive amount. I don't know what the conversion is from tons to troy ounces. That's a lot of freaking troy ounces there. Also notable, 353 tons came from Switzerland into London. That's where they got their metal in order to meet the big demand and to stop the bleeding in London. But also, two other noteworthy points here. London still exported metal to India, 493 tons. So one of the sources of that shortage of metal in London was buying in India. I suspect both central bank and retail buying. There was a lot of stories in September, October about how a lot of the demand in India, especially around the Diwali festival, shifted from gold to silver because gold had already run so much earlier in the year. And so silver was doing its catch-up play in India. A lot of demand in India there, 493 tons. And also noteworthy, no metal from China. Now, the stories I had been told, a lot of the anecdotes and the headlines I had seen said that a lot of the metal was leaving Shanghai and heading back to London to alleviate the shortage. Based on this data, that was not happening. No metal left China for London. So I'm sure there's a lot of the BRICS guys out there are going to take that no metal, no quantities to or from China. And they probably are going to have a lot to say about that, about Chinese declaring war on the Western financial system via silver. Now, normally I'm very dismissive of those talking points, but when I see no metal left China in October, despite a big arbitrage opportunity, well, that's a feather in the cap for the BRICS guys. Let's just put it that way. Gold to silver ratio right now, it is falling again, 67.7. Watch that 65 level, guys. That's just the level that I expect to see a pretty big bounce. Historical average there going back the last 40 years. I know I've had a couple of comments, people telling me I should go back 100 years or 200 years. I'm just not going to live that long, guys. I'm more worried about what's going to happen for the remainder of my life, to be honest with you. So that's why I'm using the prior 40 years. All right, let's talk a little bit about the why. The Fed is buying billions in T-bills. Just don't call it QE. Call it whatever you want. It's not money printing. It's not quantitative easing. It's this totally different other, exactly the same thing. The Federal Reserve's most important policy move this past week wasn't the cut in its policy interest rate, but the resumption of its purchases of Treasury securities, government debt. They're printing money and buying bonds. The official line is that the central bank's new buys of $20 billion of Treasury bills a month doesn't represent anything other than ordinary management of money market conditions. This is really quite normal when you think about it. No, it's definitely not. Some veteran Fed watchers aren't so sure. In particular, the central bank purchases seem part of a coordination with the Treasury to help fund the massive U.S. budget deficit and tamp down longer-term bond yields. What happened to Fed independence? Why are we having this stupid argument about Fed independence when the Fed is already coordinating money printing with Treasury debt issuance? There is no Fed independence. There never was. Smoke and mirrors, fake, all of it. As universally anticipated, the Federal Open Market Committee lowered its federal funds target by a quarter point. Less than expected was the renewal of Fed securities purchases just weeks after the central bank ended its redemptions on some of its Treasury holdings. They literally, like 12 days earlier, they ended QT and they are already starting the money printers up again. Fed Chair Jerome Powell said these reserve management purchases, oh, it's not QE, they're RMPs, three entirely different letters. They were made to prevent a tightening of short-term liquidity ahead of the April 15th tax payments, when taxpayers render unto Uncle Sam their checks go out in the financial system. Conversely, central bank purchases of securities add funds to that system. April is a ways off, however, says George Concalves, head of U.S. macro strategy at MUFG Securities America. He says he doesn't know why the Fed would see the need to preempt tax season pressures so far in advance. And he notes the Fed has ways to cope with temporary disruptions, such as standing repo facilities, which it didn't have in 2019 when the repo market suffered temporary shocks from liquidity shortages. Goncalves notes the Fed will be buying more like $60 billion of T-bills a month, which includes the reinvestment of monthly paydowns from its $2 trillion of agency mortgage-backed securities. That's a something, shout out to my friend George Vandelay. We were talking about this on my Patreon Zoom on Friday. That, you know, besides the $40 billion or up to $40 billion of T-bills the Fed is going to be buying, they're also rolling MBS off their balance sheet and then taking those proceeds and putting that in the T-bills, put a pin in those MBS coming off the balance sheet. We'll be back to that in just a second. Moreover, it could augment its bill purchases with short-term notes, he says. That would absorb a lot of paper from the markets. Strategist Washington policy team led by Daniel Clifton estimates the Fed's annual demand for $240 billion to $300 billion of T-bills would take up between 60 and 75% of the Treasury's issuance of these short-term obligations. This isn't monetizing of debt. 60 to 75% of new T-bill issuance, the Fed is just printing money into existence and buying it. Good God, this is Japanification, guys. I mean, look at what's going on in the JGB market. This is what we're talking about doing here. Now, remember we said the Fed is rolling off the MBS? Well, are they really rolling it off? If some other branch of the government that's not really a branch of the government, it's a private enterprise, but has this weird dotted line to the government, Fannie and Freddie, add billions to mortgage bond portfolios. Yeah, there's your Fed roll-off right there. They're rolling it right off the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve onto the balance sheet of Fannie and Freddie. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have added billions of dollars of mortgage-backed securities and home loans to their balance sheets in recent months, fueling speculation that they're trying to push down lending rates and boost their profitability ahead of a potential public offering. The government-backed housing finance giants increased their retained portfolios, the portion of bonds and loans they hold onto rather than sell to investors, by more than 25% in the 5 months through October, according to the latest figures. That's lifted their combined positions to $234 billion, the most since 2021. Analysts estimate they could add as much as $100 billion more next year. For now, though, the impact is mostly being felt in the $9 trillion U.S. agency MBS market. As the government-sponsored enterprises snap up more and more bonds, they're curbing the flow of the securities into the market and supporting prices. Moreover, having two large buyers step in when spreads widen could also dampen volatility and in the process alter how investors evaluate risk. Let me translate that for you. They're suppressing interest rates on mortgages by having Fannie and Freddie buy these bonds at a time when the Fed is supposed to be pushing them higher by unwinding their balance sheet. This is just another way the government fakes the data. If you want to lower mortgage rates, one of the most direct ways to do so is simply directing the GSEs to purchase more mortgage bonds, says Vitaly Lieberman, a portfolio manager at Double Line Capital. This administration is looking at everything. It's just another way they're faking the numbers, guys. Gotta love it. And we wonder why gold and silver just keep going up. Meanwhile, China's got a whole different set of problems. China's economy is deteriorating on several fronts. Broad-based weakening spans consumer spending, investment, and real estate. Problems in China, they're different than ours. They smell different than ours, but at the end of the day, it's the same thing. Fake economic growth causes problems, misallocation of resources. China's economic momentum slowed broadly in November with a marked weakness in consumer spending, adding pressure on Beijing to stabilize household and business demand in the world's second largest economy. The numbers. Retail sales plus 1.3% in November from the prior year. That's down from up 2.9% in October. So we've got slowing retail sales growth. Industrial production up 4.8% in November. That's down from the 4.9% growth in October. That's not so bad, especially considering the trade war. Fixed asset investment down 2.6% from the January to November period compared with the same stretch in 2024. Widening from a 1.7% in the January to October period last year. So less fixed asset investment, property investment. That is really bad. Down 15.9% from January to November period. In 2024, that was down 14.7% over the same period. So the property market just keeps getting worse. They call a bottom daily in the Chinese housing sector, even though it just keeps going down every day. A lot of bottoms in that Chinese market. Average home prices in 70 cities down 2.8% in November year over year compared to 2.6% in October. The home prices are falling and they are falling faster. Average urban unemployment rate 5.1% in November, unchanged from October. The unemployment numbers are highly prone to manipulation, I would add. Guys, I don't put much stock in the unemployment numbers in China after what they did with the youth unemployment. So now the interesting thing is, you know, they're talking about here, it keeps putting pressure on China's government to act, adding pressure to stabilize household and business demand. All right, these are the Keynesians in the financial press. To them, every problem looks like a problem that could be solved with government stimulus. But it looks like that's not coming in China. Alibaba, Baidu, and JD.com stocks fall. This just spooked Chinese markets. And there is Winnie the president there, President Xi Jinping. Alibaba, Baidu, and JD.com and other popular Chinese stocks were falling early Monday after disappointing economic data and a warning from the country's leader, Xi Jinping. Soft data has often helped the stocks recently, taken as a sign that government stimulus measures are more likely. But the mood was very different this time. Xi appeared to attack reckless growth and local government spending in comments made at an economic work conference in Beijing. All planning must be based on facts, pursuing real and genuine growth without exaggeration, and promoting high quality and sustainable development, he said, according to a report in China's People Daily on Sunday. Those who are unrealistic, hasty, reckless, and haphazard in their efforts will be held strictly accountable, he added. There's a lot to unpack there, all right? If you're about to fire off stimulus, that's not the kind of thing a guy says right before he starts writing blank checks to people. Reckless growth, responsible development. Also, the fact that they're targeting local governments, that's important too. Since the Evergrande crisis started in 2021 and then spread to all the other developers, the investment has slowed, the construction has slowed, but a lot of local governments and local government finance vehicles, these shell companies that are set up by local governments, have sprang up to try to make up the slack. You know, more high-speed rail projects, more bridges to nowhere, that kind of crap. And that's been used to kind of fake this economic growth to offset the collapse in the property market. Xi Jinping is specifically calling out local governments here for reckless, unrealistic, haphazard efforts. This means the stimmies aren't coming, and Chinese stocks did not like it. Now, we also got this one, more problems in the EV market. China steps up price war scrutiny as cars keep getting cheaper. All right, overproduction of EVs has been a big source of deflation in China, and they are cracking down on it. China's new restrictions on car discounts signal the government is cranking up its scrutiny of excessive competition in the local auto industry after previous attempts failed to stem falling vehicle prices. It's time to disappear some CEOs for re-education is what it sounds like there. The State Administration for Market Regulation announced a set of proposed guidelines late Friday, including measures that would prevent manufacturers from pricing cars below the cost of production and to stop dealers from offering discounts or rebates that would effectively bring down vehicle prices below cost. Shares of BYD and other Chinese makers of electric vehicles who've been relying on discounts to prop up slowing demand fell on Monday as the move signaled further scrutiny on the industry, despite China publicly shaming automakers more than 6 months ago for their rat race competition and warnings about financial health of the industry. Prices have continued to drop, and you can see here what those prices have done. A lot of them down double digits. More pricing problems, more deflation problems in China. And of course, the developers, they still got their problems. China Vanke bondholders reject payment extension, raising default risk. This one just yesterday. China Vanke failed to secure bondholder approval to extend by 1 year a bond payment due on Monday, a filing showed, increasing the risk of default for the developer and renewing concerns about the crisis-hit property sector. The setback for state-backed Vanke, one of China's highest-profile developers with projects in major cities, renews concerns about the property sector, where some of the country's best-known developers have defaulted in recent years. They've defaulted, but they haven't been liquidated. That's a big detail there, guys. Until they actually sell off the assets to pay back the bad debt, we still don't know how bad it is. It's all just sitting in purgatory. The rejection in a three-day vote that ended late on Friday gives the developer a grace period of 5 business days to pay 2 billion yuan, or about $280 million, on the onshore bond, the filing in the National Association of Financial Market Institutional Investors showed. Vanke may propose extending the grace period to 30 business days, said Yao Yu, founder of credit research firm Rating Dog. If bondholders approve, it would give the developer more time to communicate with investors and reach a consensus. And this part just beautifully reflects the desperation, right? They missed their payment. They've got 5 days to pay it back. And Vanke says, we want a year. And the bondholders say no. And they're saying, no, 5 days. And then he says, okay, we want 30 days. What do you think the bondholders are going to say? They're going to say no, 5 days. Pay your debts or sell it all. Or just what's probably going to happen, they're going to declare default. And then the court's going to take it over. There's going to be a liquidation. petition filed, a wind-up petition, whatever you want to call it. The courts will punt 6 months. 6 months will go by. It'll go back before the court. They'll say, oh, six more months. They've been doing that for 4 years. They've been doing it with Evergrande and Country Garden. They're going to do it with Ivanka too. Sooner or later, you got to sell the stuff or you got to admit that the debt is worthless. One of those two things has to be true. Meanwhile, transportation stocks are hitting their stride, and that's a good sign for investors. Uncertainty over the labor market and tariffs will put the Dow theory to the test in 2026. This is pretty interesting. Transportation stocks are rallying, signaling investor confidence in the economy's outlook. The Dow Jones Transportation Average, which tracks 20 large companies ranging from railroads to airlines, is up 10% this year and approaching an all-time high. The index recently notched its longest winning streak since August of 2020, according to Dow Jones market data, and in recent weeks has left the tech-heavy NASDAQ composite in the dust. Shares of Delta Airlines, Expeditors International, and Ryder Systems are all up more than 15% this year and recently touched records. Avis Budget Group has risen 63%, while C.H. Robinson Worldwide has gained 52%. Uber's up 41%. Southwest is up 22%. The transportation rally is a good sign, some analysts said. Airline, trucking, and railroad stocks are considered market bellwethers given their vital roles in moving goods and raw materials that power the economy. Investors will get another read on the economic outlook on Tuesday when the Labor Department releases its report on U.S. job growth and unemployment in November. The breakout in transport stocks has brought relief to investors who fretted that the outsized influence of big tech stocks in this year's stock rally could leave the market vulnerable to a downturn if a few heavyweights drop. Shares of other economically sensitive stocks included in the Russell 2000 index of smaller companies have clinched records in recent sessions. The rally has also revived interest in Dow theory, an investing idea that made its debut before the Wright brothers' first flight. The theory posits that gains in transport stocks bode well for the broader market and its continuing rally. For it to work, proponents say any new highs reached by the Dow Jones Industrial Average must be accompanied by fresh records by the Dow Transports, which we have. Now, let me ask you, though, is this really a good sign for the economy? And I want to send a shout out to my friend Craig Fuller. We'll have more to say about this later today with that interview. Is the demand rising and that's why all these things are rallying? Or is capacity being curtailed? Are these companies shrinking, making themselves more profitable in the process? And that's why the stocks are rallying. Well, Craig had a lot to say about that one in the interview on Friday. So look for that one later today. Meanwhile, Amazon scrapped its deal to buy iRobot, and now the Roomba maker is filing for bankruptcy. Well, this is fun, right? We're on the verge of this breakthrough in AI and robotics, and your job is going to be replaced by AI, and the factory is going to be run by C-3PO, and you know we're going to have these Optimus robots walking around building everything, and that's why Roomba's going bankrupt, right? Because robots are so awesome. iRobot filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy and agreed to be taken over by its main supplier on Sunday, meaning that the Roomba maker will go private nearly 2 years after a deal with Amazon fell apart. The Massachusetts-based consumer robotics company said in a statement that it would enter a restructuring agreement giving primary contract manufacturer Picea 100% of the equity interest in the company. It owes $352 million to Picea, and nearly $91 million of that debt is past due, according to iRobot. Shareholders in this company are getting wiped out. Going to lose everything if this deal goes through. And look at iRobot stock this morning, down 72%, trading at $1.21, off by $3.11. So somebody out there is buying this dip here thinking bankruptcy is a good sign. Maybe this is going to be awesome. I don't know. It's a bold call, Cotton. We'll see if it pays off to him. Where I come from, bankruptcy is bad, but we'll see what happens. Meanwhile, McKinsey plots thousands of job cuts and a slowdown for the consulting industry. All right, we've got the jobs report is coming out later this week. This doesn't bode well for that. As McKinsey partners gathered in the consulting giant's birthplace in late October, Bob Sternfels delivered a rallying cry. "We will kick some ass as we start our second century," the firm's top executive told the thousands of attendees. But away from the 100-year festivities in Chicago, McKinsey bosses have been conveying a more pragmatic message. It's time to get leaner. The firm's leadership had discussed with managers in non-client-facing departments the need to cut about 10% of headcount across their business. That would be about 4,000 jobs, according to people with knowledge of the matter. That could amount to a few thousand jobs that McKinsey would stagger over the next 18 to 24 months, the people said, asking not to be identified. For McKinsey, the go-to advisor for companies and countries in the type of cost-cutting approach that its consultants often prescribe to clients, the firm's revenue growth has flatlined in the last 5 years, leading to a reset after rapid hiring over the prior decade. As our firm marks its 100th year, we're operating in a moment shaped by rapid advances in AI that are just transforming the business and society, a McKinsey spokesperson said. Just as we're partnering with clients to strengthen their organizations, we're on our own journey to improve the effectiveness and efficiency of our support functions. Yep, revenue growth flatlined over the last 5 years, but we're laying people off because of all the wonderful opportunities in AI, not because our company is dead in the water and we can't grow unless we start cutting heads. This is really about the exciting opportunities before us, which is typically what you say to somebody right after you throw their entire life into chaos by firing them. Oh, this is about the opportunities for you. Meanwhile, TPG takes $600 million hit on Eyebrow Queen Cosmetics. Okay, I thought cosmetics do really well during economic downturns, but apparently not. This is another case of private equity strip mining. TPG Inc. exited most of its stake in Anastasia Beverly Hills as part of a debt restructuring, largely wiping out the private equity firm's $600 million investment in the cosmetic company, according to people familiar with the matter. TPG purchased about 38% of the beauty company from its founders in 2018 in a deal that was financed with a combination of debt taken on by Anastasia and preferred shares bought by TPG. All right, so they buy 38% of the company, but how do they pay for it? They pay for it with debt taken on by the company they're buying. That's pretty nice, isn't it? It's not even their money. The company they're borrowing borrows the money, gives it to them, and then they buy the company with it. That's called a leverage buyout, all right? And it's usually a really bad sign. Leverage buyouts, in my experience, I don't ever see them go well, all right? I'm admittedly biased, but I don't ever see good stories coming out of leverage buyouts. TPG now has a roughly 6% stake. See, they bought 38% of the company, but now because they can't service that debt, now they only own 6% of the company. All of whom asked not to be identified, discussing private information. Anastasia is taking steps to align our capital structure with underlying strength in our business and our resilient operational performance, a spokesperson said. Man, they sound great, don't they? Every time they're like, we're wiping out our investors, it's all about our underlying strength and our resilience, not about how we ran this company into the ground. The company is working with its lenders to address its upcoming loan maturity, the person said. Anastasia gained global prominence by selling eyebrow shaper products that were so popular that Soar became known as the Eyebrow Queen. That's, I guess, their founder. She went on to build an empire with an array of beauty products with distribution through retailers such as Dillard's, Macy's, Nordstrom, and Sephora. Soar published a book in October telling her story of building a billion-dollar beauty empire. Do you think that story of the billion-dollar beauty empire included the $600 million wipeout at TPG? I don't know. Maybe volume two of the billion-dollar beauty empire includes the private equity firm losing $600 million of their investors' money through a leveraged buyout. But really, it's a personal growth story. Really. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. Roger Torn. Roger T. Thanks, Roger. It's hard when it's all one word worn together. Roger, thank you for becoming a YouTube member and for supporting the channel. I appreciate that very much. Madison Hype says, what the heck is going on in Oklahoma? It's lawless. Thank you very much, Madison, for plugging my we're going to call this one a documentary because it was a little long to call it a video. If you guys haven't already seen it, I did a video on Friday. I worked on it all last week, all about what's going on in Lindsay, Oklahoma, about the little town with the little bank failure in 2024 that nobody seemed to care about. Nobody at all cared about. And the more I dug into that story, holy crap, the stuff I uncovered in that little town. Guys, I got great feedback from that video. Thank you. Your comments were wonderful. I even got a nice little helping of pearl-clutching hate mail from some of the locals in positions of prominence. Those were very, very, very nice to read. But yeah. It's an interesting story there, what they've done to the people in that town and the towns around it. Really just dreadful. And I hope somebody cares. That's all. We got a lot of government alphabet soup. Somebody's got to go in there and clean up what's going on in there because they are just absolutely bleeding these people dry. Thank you very much, Madison, for supporting the channel. SWFLBOK said, bad time to invest in more gold and silver bank, question mark. Bad time to invest in gold and silver. Let me just say, when I buy gold and silver, I don't view it as an investment. I view it as a savings vehicle, all right? I use this as an off-ramp from the casino because you can put your money in a bank where it loses value because of financial repression, where the interest rates never keep up with the rate of inflation, not ever, all right? Or you can put your money in a casino and risk some dirtbag like Sam Altman or some private equity firm looting your company and taking all your money, leaving you with nothing. Or you can exit the casino and you can store your wealth in something like this, and then it's more on your terms. Yes, there's manipulation in the precious metals market. Yes, it has its ups and downs. But over time, it goes up. And well, the last 2 years, it goes up a lot. So is there ever a bad time to do that? In my opinion, no. All right. I try not to track the prices closely when I buy my metals because it's not really about nominal price movement up or down, day-to-day view in the charts. It's long-term savings is what I do for that. So now I do trades. You know, I move in and out of options and SLV and things like that. Yeah, I watch the charts for that. And I watch the gold to silver ratio so I can trade back and forth between silver and gold. Maybe hopefully over time add to my weight that way. There's things you can do there. But generally, I view that as a savings vehicle more than an investment. Thank you very much, SWFL Buck. Hey, he's back again. He says, Linz's story from that investigative work. Yeah, that was a doozy. I went pretty deep on that one, guys. It's a rough watch. I'm not going to lie. And I'll tell you, while I was making that video, it was in the back of my mind. This is too much information. I'm going to lose people. It's this little town. Nobody's going to care. I was very pleasantly surprised by how many people stayed with it. By the way, watched the whole thing. The retention numbers were great. You guys watched it. Some people watched it in pieces. I can actually see that granularity in the data if you're watching the whole video or not. But people came back over the weekend, watched the whole thing, followed the information, really good feedback. So thank you guys for caring. I appreciate that. I'm hoping some state and local media picks up with that and runs on it, maybe digs into some of the stuff that I couldn't find. That would be nice. You know, the whole journalism thing, journalists, any of you guys out there. But thank you very much. I appreciate the kind words and all the good feedback, guys. James Laguerre. Thank you, James, for becoming a Melonhead member. Welcome to the Melon Patch, sir. We got some more baby melons today, guys. Thank you very much. Appreciate the support of the channel. Steve Wood is singing the tune this morning, says, in the first day of Christmas, the Fed bought treasuries. But please don't call it QE. Oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Come up with 11 more of those. No, I will not sing them all on the air, but that's pretty funny, Steve. Thank you for the laugh, sir. 12 days of quantitative Christmas. Gotta love it. Nashville Pasta Man, what's going on? He says, big bottom loans make the rockin' girl world go round. All right, that's a little more my speed than 12 days of Christmas. That is a powerful riff, that opening guitar in that song. But yeah, fat big bottom loans make the rockin' world go round. Come on and sing it loud. All right, Pasta Man. Thank you, sir. Spacecraft 24. Note the K in spacecraft. Are we talking about mac and cheese in space? He says, need to recover MSTR losses. Metals safe near term. Metals are always safe. But remember with metals, nominal price go up, nominal price go down. So when metals go up, you're not making money. It's just your dollar getting less value. When metals go down, you're not losing money. It's your dollars are getting more valuable. All right, so you know, need to make up for strategy losses. That sucks. If the whole thing with the infinite money glitch, yeah, who could have seen that one coming? Again, guys, I buy a little bit of metal on the regular. I try not to get too hung up in the day-to-day price movement. It's more long-term than that. So, yes, metals have had a hell of a run. We could. I was watching a video on, was it Silver Dragons, I think? I think it was Silver Dragons. No, it was Silver Seeker over the weekend. And he's talking to coin dealers. And a lot of these guys swear it's 2011 again, which means a brutal price correction is coming. And, you know, these guys have lived it before 2011 and 1980. That could happen again. So, you know, we're in uncharted territory here, technically speaking. There's no, you can look at prior levels and support and resistance and all this stuff. Not when you're in the 60s. There is no map here. We're flying blind. So, in my opinion, all the underlying fundamentals pushing metals higher will continue. I actually think gold may start to outperform silver here for a little while. Gold vastly outperformed silver for the last year and a half. And then from like August to October, silver, big time catch up. But now the gold to silver ratio is as low as it's been since 2021, give or take a few. Typically, we see the gold to silver ratio move higher from here. That could either mean gold going up faster. That could mean silver going down. That could mean both going down in tandem. But I think gold will probably start to outperform shortly here. Thank you very much, Spacecraft, for supporting the channel. Hey, Thousandaire Radio, what's up, friendo? That's another one of my favorite stacking channels. Check out Thousandaire Radio, by the way, and hit that like button while you're over there. He says, this is an amazing way to start the day. Thank you so much, Thousandaire. I appreciate the good vibe, sir. Keep the good content coming. I like the shiny. By the way, I got to get some Morgans. Every time I watch your channel, I think to myself, I don't have any Morgans. I need to get some Morgans. They're typically more expensive than the other stuff, but they're nice. Try not to collect coins, though. I try to just stack metal. Thanks again, Thousandaire. Raiden57 says, any more news on Hanson Muller elevator failure? No. That's a new one. Hanson Muller elevator. Did I even cover that one? Any more news on it? That would suggest there was prior news. I touch on so many stories here. Every now and then, one gets out the ears, and I lose it. No, I have nothing to add to that one, Raiden, but it's going in the parking lot here. I'm going to look for that one. Hanson Muller. Not one I've been following that closely, but I will look for news and report back if there's anything to report. Thank you, Raiden, for supporting the channel. Nacho Man, thank you, sir. Just being a swell guy with a big orange one. Thank you, Nacho Man. I appreciate that. Thank you for supporting the channel, sir. Was there another comment? Oh, wait, hold on. Let's see when Mish is clarifying. Iowa elevator went bust. We covered. Okay. Mish is Johnny on the spot. All right, I'm going to go look for that. I'll see what happened on the it's an Iowa elevator company, Hanson Muller. Probably reflective of the breakdown in multifamily construction or less of it there. Thank you, Mish, for clarifying that one. But I haven't heard anything about a wind-up petition or anything like that. So, again, I will just look. Thank you very much, Nacho Man. Thank you, Raiden, again. Mish, hey, 10 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Thank you so much, Mish, for the memberships. Oh, I think Nacho probably sent to Mish and said, Mish, that's for the memberships. I've seen that before. Now I get it. All right. Welcome to the Melon Patch. Hey, guys, say thank you to Mish and to Nacho Man. Appreciate the support of the channel, guys. Richard Bell says, will cult memes ever crash? Yes, they will. Abso-freaking-lutely. And by cult memes, I'm thinking of crypto treasury companies. I am thinking of AI cult companies. Yes, there is no underlying business supporting the valuations of these things. None at all. I mean, this thing I keep hearing about is like, oh, the AI bubble is different than the dot-com bubble because the underlying fundamentals of the hyperscalers are strong and it's supported by good, strong cash flows. Then why are they creating special purpose vehicles to hide their debt with private credit firms like Blue Owl? If the underlying fundamentals are so freaking strong, why are they hiding that shit from their balance sheet? That's not the kind of thing strong fundamentals do. Sorry. And by the way, those strong underlying fundamentals and the revenues and everything, who's actually paying to rent all of these data centers that they're building? Oh, that's right. Companies that all hemorrhage cash. Where are they getting their money from? An endless stream of new investors. What happens if those new investors decide to stop investing? The whole thing stops working. By the way, all of these hyperscalers have 4 years, maybe five, to make back all of this money they invested before those chips become worthless, and it's already been two. Not going to happen. This bubble is doomed. It's going to be spectacular when it goes up. And just remember, guys, nobody saw this coming. Thank you very much, Richard, for supporting the channel. Pasta Man says, hey, Jack, no comments on memory. I forgot. Sorry. See? Thanks. I'll be here all week. There are companies buying whole computers just to get the memory, Samsung discounting SSDs. I did see the story this morning about the solid state drives. The memory thing that's been going on, Sam Altman basically bought up all the high bandwidth memory on the market. He bought it all. And on it, I don't know if Sam needs it or if this is just Sam's way of like standing in a crowded room and pulling the pin in a grenade and saying, I'll take you all with me, which the kind of things I've read about Sam Altman's personality and some of the behaviors I've seen from him in interviews when he lashes out people who question his omnipotence. Yeah, he is the kind of guy who would pull the pin in a grenade in a crowded room. That is exactly the kind of thing a nut like Sam Altman would do. So maybe he just bought up all the HBM just so nobody else could have it and they all go down together. If OpenAI is going to go bankrupt, you're all going with me. Maybe he's just trying to pull a Hunt Brothers on memory chips. I don't know, but he's making a mess. And ever since then, who was it? Micron exited the consumer memory business because of that. So it's just another reason why the gamers absolutely hate AI. They drove up the price of GPUs. Now they're driving up the price of RAM. These guys are making a mess. They're making an absolute mess. This bubble cannot pop soon enough, Pasta Man. And again, just remember, nobody saw this coming. Yep. See what I did there? All right. New Day Adventure says, excellent Oklahoma Bank deep dive, Jack. Very sad, though. I agree. That one was rough, especially the middle of the video. You guys will see. It was hard to sit and listen to, I'm sure, some of the stuff talking about the human side of what was done to some of these people. Imagine reading this stuff. Imagine trying to produce that video, trying to record it. And I can tell you, especially that what happened at that Nenica Public School District, I had to read the indictments. Oh, my God, the cases. Oh, my God, the things they said to these girls to try to prevent them from coming forward. What unbelievable sleaze bags. And then I have these people like, oh, how could you say such things about good Christian people? I'm getting these hate mails from these people. Oh, really? You're going to use you're going to use the fact that you went to church to cover up the assault of more than a dozen underage victims? Gag me with that. Gag me. Anyways, yeah. Thank you, New Day Adventure. It was very sad. It was hard to get through. But, you know, you got to talk about this stuff. Otherwise, these dirtbags are going to keep doing it. So you just have to do it. Rob Reiner and his – yeah, yep. Sorry, Jolly. Don't really want to – appreciate the support of the channel, but don't really want to go down that rabbit hole. That's a sad, messed up story. Yesterday, we kind of showed how bad we could be. You know, there's a lot of bad stuff happened yesterday. But I just want to end on a good note. I can tell you, I introduced my daughters to the River Bottom Nightmare Band for the first time yesterday. And if you guys don't know what the River Bottom Nightmare Band is, I would submit you have not yet lived. So go check out Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas. It is, in my opinion, the best Christmas movie that has ever been made. And I sat and watched it with the girls yesterday, and it was awesome. So that's the note we're going to end the show on. And I just want to say thank you, everybody, so much for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Appreciate all the generosity and the super chats and the kind words about the Oklahoma video, guys. Thank you very much. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm on the way out. Thank you very much also to my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Appreciate the support. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.